Yeah, it's tasty. It looks like piss. Nothing personal.
It has, I would say, kind of a light amber color.
It's kind of like the urine you want to have. Well, it's bordering on healthy colored urine.
Yeah, it's maybe a little. I'd be a little dehydrated if I.
But
if
not
I
a lot.
Like, not a lot.
No, just a little bit. Yeah, I mean it's a little thick. For urine, you probably don't want your urine to be this viscous.
No, but if it were this apple-y and honey tasting, that would be.
Well, Smike, how would you figure out if your piss was this?
You would smell it. I think you would smell it. Like, why does my urine smell like apples and honey?
Would you taste it to confirm?
Probably not.
Okay,
but I would be intrigued though. I would be like, that smells nice.
Think of all the amazing tasting urine you have missed in your lifetime. Just take a moment and think, wow.
No, okay. No. Well,
nothing.
Well, I've never smelled urine and thought, that smells nice.
Yeah, actually, I don't think I have.
Have you?
Have I?
I mean, I've smelled some different, you know, varieties. I mean, including, a certain range of my own, you know, depending on what I've eaten or had to drink or whatever. You ever get the... You ever get the stuff that's like smells like you don't remember King Vitamin cereal, but that was a thing.
King Vitamin
cereal. Yeah, it was like this. It was this cereal that was like alphabets. It was more, like kind of a more generic alphabets without the lettering.
It's terrible name for a cereal.
No, yeah.
Was it marketed to kids?
The kids are not the ones who are putting down the money. So
okay, that's fair.
I'm going to say it's marketed towards the parents.
But I mean,
we're going to say, "Ooh, King Vitamin, that sounds healthy. I'm going to buy that for my children."
And the kid's going to say, "Ew, King Vitamin, that sounds healthy.
Give me some damn alphabets."
Right? Which is the same thing.
Because I like to spell with my food. And I'm not so sure that was a great, marketing thing. If you're going for the kids.
Well, I will say that alphabets are a better spelling cereal than Cheerios.
Unless you just like, ooh.
Ooh, I stole that joke from The Simpsons.
All right.
Hi, we are Buddies in Space.
You are Michael Carassi.
And you are Michael Smith.
Yeah, we have only begun imbibing. A little bit.
Why don't you tell the audience about our yellow, viscous urine-like drink?
You're really not selling it very well.
It tastes delicious.
It does. It's the honey liqueur, which, what was it? I just had it in my hand and I can't think of the name.
It has a beehive for a top.
Yep, the cap is shaped like a beehive.
And you first had it in Rheinblick's German restaurant.
Yes.
This is the only way I'm going to be able to describe it. I have no idea what it's called.
Yes. They make a honey liqueur and a honey bourbon.
Right.
Now, we discovered that the honey bourbon goes really well with just straight-up apple juice.
Mm-hmm.
Because the honey bourbon is not as sweet and rich as the honey liqueur.
Did we do apple juice or apple cider?
Apple cider.
Yeah, it was cider.
Yes. And that is a good combo. Not hard apple cider, just regular apple cider.
Yeah.
That was a good combo. Now, the honey liqueur is, like I said, more rich and sweet. So I needed to find something a little bit more harsh, I guess.
So you found apple moonshine.
I did. I found some apple shine, which is much more on the harsh side, but you still get the apple flavor. It's so you get the honey and the apple. It's a good fit. You have it on the rocks. The ice melts a little bit, gets a little watery, and then it smooths it out very nicely. There we go.
That's the sound of it smoothing.
Yes.
I like it, and you're right. As it melts, it's getting a little bit. It's losing a little bit of the harshness.
Mm-hmm.
I should have probably not had this much, only because I did spend my entire birthday hungover.
Ah.
But I'm not complaining.
Okay.
Because as I posed on Facebook, you know, you had a really good night before your birthday. In my case, my wife's birthday.
Yes.
Because I was hurting pretty badly the next day. But now I feel fine, so we'll see how I feel tomorrow.
Do you want to plug the restaurant while we're plugging products?
Well, I will plug the restaurant and the people who took us to the restaurant.
Okay.
So I will plug you and your wife for taking us out to an amazing meal.
plugging you with food.
And plugging me with food. It is probably, I looked at the scale the next day. It's probably good we didn't continue the food challenge with the pizza. So Mike, I gained 5 pounds in one day.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
No, not nice, but I guess it's respectable. Yeah. I'm going to try to lose that again soon. Yeah, so the restaurant is...
I'm not afraid to take food home, Mike.
I did take
food. I took the majority of that risotto home. And
you know that there is a long-standing thing that I have where when I get drunk, I challenge myself to eat things I shouldn't. No one else challenges
me. You do. Yeah, that's true. And it's weird because the one time, the classic time that I remember this is
classic.
We were walking through Wegmans and we're all a little tipsy.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying, oh, you don't think I can eat this? I will. I'll eat this. What was it? It was like some sort of fish thing. We were in the foreign food section.
It was like sardines.
It was
and
like
oil.
Bad sardine.
Yeah, it was vile.
But not sardine. It was.
Was it like mackerel?
Maybe. I don't know.
It was canned.
It was gross.
Fish meat in oil.
Yeah, very oily.
Well, it got weirder than that because it started with like, oh yeah, I'll eat this.
And nobody's telling me not to. Hey, Mike, I dare you to eat this. We're all just going, okay, you want to get that? Fine, we'll get it for you.
But then I somehow conned your wife into spending $20 on food that I was going to eat.
It was worth it, I think. That was money well spent.
But that was the thing, is I escalated it somehow myself. No one was participating in this challenge but me on the other end. So it was me saying, oh, I'll eat this fish. I was like, what? You want me to eat, what was it? It was wasabi something or sriracha something? There was like a wasabi-based... Oh, there's a drink, too. It was a super spicy drink. It was hot ginger.
Yeah, it was
hot ginger beer.
A very spicy ginger beer.
Yeah, that actually might have been my saving grace.
Which was pretty good.
It was good.
I had some of that. It was very very strong.
Very strong.
Very spicy.
But it might have helped my stomach after the fish, in retrospect. But yeah, actually, it's not like that. It's always with your... I always challenge myself as if your wife's challenging me. Because again, at dinner... The other night, I was like, oh, yeah, Mel? I'll get a salad, too. And she's like, okay.
You threatened to get a pizza.
I think we just kind of said,
we believe you can eat the pizza, Mike. I just dropped a...
Did your finger just fall?
No.
You were gesticulating and just like part of your hand just came off.
It was a wadded up napkin, which does look a little bit like a misshapen finger.
From the corner of my eye, it was your finger, but unless you had an extra. Did you have an extra leprous finger?
I do not.
No, obviously you don't anymore. Did you?
Fun tricks. You could do that to amuse your friends. You know, get that wadded up napkin. Like, hey, I got 11 fingers. Oh, what happened? It's like
Mike,
magic.
You don't have 11 fingers.
Like horrible, shitty magic.
There's a website of Uncle, it's like called like Uncle Magic. It's like, no, it's funny. It's cute kind of. It's like things that your friends with kids, like things that your adopted niece and nephew will find really amazing when they're 5.
Yes.
Like those kind of magic
tricks. Really easy to do.
Super easy. Yeah. Like bouncing a roll on the floor. So you just basically like, you have to do it so that they can't see your hand hitting. So you throw down, but you really just hit your knee with the bread and bounce it back up, but you're hitting your foot on the floor at the same time. So it's like, and obviously there's a visual that the people at home are missing, but it was kind of clever. And then there was how to levitate off the ground, and you have to line it up exactly at 45 degrees from the kids. And then you put all your weight on like the ball of your right foot. And then, so you make a big deal of your other foot lifting. And then they can't, from the angle they show, like you can't see the ball of that foot. And I'm thinking, like, this is so dumb. Wait, no, when I was that age, that would totally blow my mind. I'd be like, holy fucking shit, you're levitating.
I think that's how Chris Angel does it, too.
Fucking Chris Angel. You know what would be a travesty is if he isn't, or maybe he is just a douchebag in general, but if he actually did do good magic tricks, but he's just so annoying that no one really cares about him.
Well, obviously, I mean, he does well for himself, so enough people, maybe, you know. Maybe he's just hit that 5-year-old market better than anyone else.
Oh my God, we're going to Vegas. We're going to see Wayne Newton and Chris Angel. It's going to be amazing.
Vegas. Wonderful place, Vegas. It's a true testament to anything can be done if you have enough money.
That's true. Including bringing life to the lifeless dead.
Yes. Maybe not such a great idea.
Who looks? It's like placenta cream.
What?
Yeah, bear with me.
That was the sound of me very nearly spewing my delicious drink out.
I kind of wish you had. It would have been funny.
No, it would have been all over your microphone.
It's shielded. There's a screen and there's a windscreen. I've added to my recording rig a lot. Someone said, oh, here is some placenta. I'm going to rub this on my face.
And now this is a thing.
It's a thing. It's a real thing. Women do. It's good for your skin.
Okay.
So it's like that. So like someone.
You're saying, though, this is really something that is good for your skin.
Yes. No, it's legitimately.
Genuinely, legitimately.
My wife will fact check us because that's what she does after she listens to our podcast. But as I understand it, placenta cream is something that is good for your skin.
Okay, that's a catch-all sort of disclaimer, as I understand it.
Well, I have always believed that is what I was told or heard. My point is, someone said, I'm going to rub placenta. Therefore, it has to be true, right? It's on the internet somewhere. Someone said, I'm going to rub this placenta on my face. Oh, it's good for my skin. Someone went out to the middle of the fucking desert and said, I'm going to build a gambling metropolis here where there is nothing. And both of them worked.
I know Vegas worked. I didn't know, you know, placenta cream is...
It's a burgeoning market. Smith.
Okay. Maybe I should try to get in on this. Are there placenta investment opportunities?
Well, what you should ask is, what other creams can we market that aren't on the market yet?
Made out of what other various expendable body...
Well, you do have this leprous finger under my seat right now, so we can start
I tried
there.
To explain to you, Mike, that's not actually a finger. I know.
Well,
it
once
looks
it's
so
detached,
real.
I know, but... Oh, I think I was supposed to plug the restaurant, too.
And this is a good time, isn't it? While we're mentioning
leprous
fingers, placenta creams, various horrible, disgusting things, none of which were on the menu.
None. There was Demon Hunter, though.
There was, which was a severed head.
It was amazing. I still have the wrapper upstairs. So Mike and his lovely wife, Melinda, took Erica and I out for our joint back-to-back birthdays to Bronca, which is an awesome, fairly new Italian eatery in Rochester. It's in Bushnell's Basin. It's a pit's food, if you know anything about that. It's a pit's food.
It's also a Japanese pronunciation of a character in Street Fighter.
Bronca? Oh. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Because it smells.
That's what I always think when I hear Bronca.
Oh, wait, but what is it? Wasn't it Blanca?
Yes.
In the English one? Okay. Right. I was like, wait, that doesn't sound right. Listen, John Carpenter. It was so confused when you were talking about that last time. But yeah, a wonderful restaurant. Co-worker, friend, someone who I worked with, who I do consider a friend, lovely woman, Jenna, her and her husband. So she and I were like the non-restaurant people working at tastings.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was going to Brockport for social...
Tastings down now, the somewhat almost mythical restaurant that used to be attached to the Pittsburgh Wegmans.
It was a restaurant that could never fail because it was Danny Wegman's, like, sandbox. So he would, no joke, he would go to France, he'd go to the Burgundy region of France, and he'd say, oh, I really like how they fold napkins in this restaurant. So he'd come back, and then we'd just be folding our napkins the same way. And so, like, it was just kind of known in the company. We were very unliked in the company because we were always in the red. We never made a profit.
Because you had, like it was a great place. I ate there a couple of times, and it was the food was a fantastic. You had great chefs there. And...
Great. Well, the sushi program launched there, and then the guy Satoshi, as I mentioned in a previous podcast, went on to head the entire Wegman sushi program, I believe, where he's second head. One of the other chefs is the head chef of the Revelry, mm-hmm. Jenna and Josh's other restaurant. Like, yeah, there's a really weird pedigree of how...
And there was somebody else who opened what was the other restaurant?
Oh, yeah, the Italian-Japanese fusion, Marco. Yes. Another one of the line cooks, Mark Moyo, opened up that place.
I feel like you missed out, Mike, that you should have opened your own restaurant. It seems like everybody else from tastings has done that now.
There is one restaurant concept I would like to do. So it's like still, even after all the...
There is already a ninja-themed restaurant in New York, Mike. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but... Is it good or is it just ninjas?
Okay. Is it Star Wars themed?
No.
Because there would be licensing issues with that.
Yeah, I'm aware. No, it would be a paleo restaurant.
All right.
So it would be very expensive.
It would be like a cave-shaped doorway.
Yeah, someone's dressed in loincloths and it's all caveman. No, I don't think I'd go that.
You just sort of like point and grunt at things that you want on the menu. Which is chiseled in stone somewhere.
It's the heaviest menu you've ever seen. It's basically Flintstones theme, but we get around the... No, it's not Flintstones, it's paleo. That's not Dino.
I would go there, man. I would go there. I would even... I would. I would say, you know, if loincloth is
the required,
I would be all over that.
Yeah, because it's barely any clothing on you.
Yeah.
It's like one step above a toga. No, I think that, I don't think there's a lot of
It's like the swimsuit version of a toga.
Showing a lot of leg this, Mike.
Your summer toga.
My summer toga, also known as my loincloth. No, I think that would be, I don't know if it would fly, but paleo is popular enough, and the recipes are really good if you know how to cook it. But it's pricey because it's like organic vegetables and grass-fed organic meat. But you feel great. I mean, can you imagine going out to a restaurant feeling amazing after you ate? That would be worth it.
That's, yeah, I mean, it'd be nice. It's hard to, you know, sell that.
Yeah, you'd have to experience it, and you'd have to pony up for it. I'm not saying it's a good concept. I'm not convinced of that. I'm just saying that's the only restaurant concept I would really want.
Because there are a lot of things I like in restaurants that I know you wouldn't be able to have. Like, for example, what we're drinking right now.
Well, that's... you obviously want to make profit, so of course you're going to sell alcohol.
Well, then you're kind of off the paleo diet then, aren't you?
It's paleo-esque. How about that? God forbid you did a bulletproof restaurant.
What? What is this? What
the bulletproof diet. It's like my coffee. There's a diet that goes with it.
Oh, jeez.
And it's like, I swear to God,
this five this, things you can this eat. Thing terrifies me, Mike. It what? Sounds like the most unhealthy combination of things that you can imagine.
What, the butter, coffee, coconut oil thing?
Yes.
I've told you
butter about... Butter is not something I would put on a healthy diet. Coffee certainly, you know, wouldn't be the things I would think that, hey, this is great for your health.
It's part biohacking. Biohockey. From the people who bought you Demolition Derby, it's biohockey. Now play with 7 leprous fingers. Yeah, but I mean, I showed you my blood work. Or I told you about my blood work.
You didn't show me the blood.
I have it right in that drawer.
I believe you. I don't want to go through your blood right now.
Come on, Mike. Look at my blood.
He does have a microscope set up here with a couple of like boxes of slides, apparently.
And some Petri dishes. I can take your blood. You give me say the word.
That's okay. I'll pass. Sure? I'll pass on that.
Positive.
I'd like to pass on that showcase. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, I realized that when I was telling people, yeah, I fast for 18 hours a day, which I still do to this day. I've been doing it for almost a year now.
Still, yeah.
I fast for 18 hours a day, and then the first thing I have when I break my fast, well, the thing that lets me fast that long is because I have buttered coffee with coconut oil and MCT oil. I understand that sounds crazy.
I can't believe that at some point you're not going to realize, oh, my gallbladder has turned into a golf ball or something, you know, some weird, unexpected
My finger complication. Fell off. Oh, wait, that happened
see,
to you.
Yeah. Or suddenly I have an extra nose. I don't know. What?
There is a lot of research, to get on my high horse for a moment, there is a lot of research that the SAD, the Standard American Diet, is horribly unhealthy.
Oh, I totally believe that. I'm not making that argument.
Do you know the history of where the food pyramid came from?
Yeah, it was like the everybody who, you know, like the Dairy Council weighed in on it. I remember like dairy products were like an integral part of the food pyramid.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which was like, you look at that now, it's like, that's crazy.
Well, what's crazy is that fat-free milk is so popular. That's what's crazy to me. Because fat-free, like that was the discard. They used to throw that away. That was waste. No one wanted the fat-free part of the milk.
Mm-hmm.
There's not nearly as much nutritional value to it. And they add an unstable vitamin D to it to get it to stabilize. So that's when we were talking, I think, a while ago about vitamin D being leached out of your body by milk. It's fat-free vitamin D that's doing that. So yeah, the dairy farmers were all about it. But no, it was a commission. It was a flawed, it was a falsified study. So this one scientist, and this is well documented, you can look it up, but it's not in the public consciousness. One doctor said, I think I can prove that fat causes heart disease. That was his hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
So he looked at the diets of like 20 different countries, and a few of them helped his theory, but a lot of them completely disproved it. Like Finland.
Mm-hmm.
Basically anywhere that's eating natural sourced dairy and mm-hmm. fish.
Mm-hmm.
And coconut. And what's funny about all three of those is they're all incredibly fatty.
Right.
Which is where the butter comes in. So anyway, so this guy said, oh, look, shoving all the the inconvenient stuff out of the way. Look, I've proven this. So the government, so some senator had no idea what he was doing. He was like, we should create a standardized diet off of this. So he had an intern draft a diet that got drafted as the American diet, you know, the first like food pyramid. No one involved in this had any right to be doing this. It all was based off of falsified data.
And corporate interest, right?
Always corporate interest. It's almost, you just assume. So because now,
like you said, you've got the dairy industry, whatever, and the beef.
Why do they have a council?
Farmers, I don't know.
It's a bunch of fucking businessmen selling milk.
But when you would hear that, I mean, mm-hmm. I grew up, hearing some mm-hmm. stuff about dairy council. I'm like, oh, these are people who know a lot about dairy.
You can't have a council unless you know what you're doing.
This must be a truly wise, knowledgeable group of people.
Did you imagine a bunch of, old Gandalf sitting on the table, sipping milk, yes, this milk shall pass!
That is actually exactly how I imagined it.
I knew it!
Yes.
It's because your finger's underneath me, I understand now. I'm picking up on your vibes, your dead, leprous finger vibes. Yeah, so then fast
forward. But now you think, that was a lobbying group, wasn't it?
I know a lot better, yeah. I know just enough to be terrified of what we're being sold. So now, the corn thing, soy is in everything. And you hear, soy is healthy. No, fermented soy is healthy.
Right.
Soy is really fucking bad for you, and they feed it to children. We were reading, Eric and I were reading, if you feed your kids soy formula, if they have an intolerance, they're getting, 100, I think it's 100 times the amount of soy that they recommend for a baby. Or 100 times the amount of soy they normally get. Something preposterous like that.
And is that worse than corn? Because corn's the other thing that's in everything.
I don't know if we know yet. But no one really thinks that it's good. That amount of corn. Because there's a lot of sugar in corn.
Yeah, corn's weird, man. It's I guess corn is just really easy to grow. Is that it?
It's a super cheap cash crop.
Because it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it's not just in food. I mean, the government is paying. Even in plastic, it goes in your fuel. It's everywhere.
It's almost a little too versatile for my taste. So anyway, the point of all this is, if you look at the countries that were removed from this asshole study, you see that you can have all the cheese and butter and fat that you want.
I like the sound of that.
But it has to be naturally sourced.
Okay.
So the whole thing about, when I say I drink butter coffee, I don't stick fucking
Land Lakes in it. So Velveeta would not be...
No.
Okay.
No. Actually, cheese in general is not paleo or bulletproof.
What?
I eat cheese. I don't care. I mean...
Cheese is delicious, though.
Cheese is amazing. And I think maybe the aged cheeses are probably a little healthier.
Really?
A little help in mold. That's my theory. I don't know. All right.
But, I'll go along with it because I like cheese.
Well, do you know why? You know how some cheeses are illegal in the United States? Have you heard this?
Okay, once again, Mike, you have blown my mind. Is there a black market for cheese out there?
Kind of.
Can I get in on it?
I want to. I want to finish this
twice.
Point.
If you know of a cheese guy, okay, I won't say how many times you winked,
but it was twice.
But I'm gonna touch my nose.
But you're not gonna say if you touch it. Wait, you just did. Shit! I'm gonna have to edit all this now.
No, we don't know of any cheese guys out there.
There are no cheese guys.
No.
That we can talk about. These are not the cheese guys
cheese
you're looking
guys
for.
Are looking for, yeah.
I'm doing the Jedi thing. I'm not quoting it properly. All right, I will tell you about that, but really quick. So apparently this is another food podcast. So I use, it's very specific and bulletproof. Dave Asprey, who is the guy who invented this, put a shit ton of research out there. He's like, here, feel free to pick it apart, but he does make money off it. And he says, I'm a businessman. So, accept that. I don't buy any of his products. He sells all the components. I've never bought anything from him. I did everything through Wegmans.
Mm-hmm.
One of my coworkers, Nero, got into it, and he loves it too. The few people I've gotten into it really still like it a lot, but he ordered all his stuff. But, I don't really see a difference. Anyway, I have to use Kerrygold butter because Kerrygold is one of the only commercially available butters that is grass-fed mm-hmm. cows.
And that is somehow important.
Very important. So here's the takeaway, because I am really starting to sound like a bulletproof podcast because there are some of them out there. The whole thing about this diet is, and when I'm doing it right, you have to eat organic grass-fed meats, and your butter has to be from grass-fed, because this whole conception, I've told you why fat isn't as bad as we think. There is zero correlation between fat and heart disease. Look at it.
I'm glad to hear that because I like fatty things.
I'm sorry. I should have actually qualified that.
Okay.
There is zero correlation between naturally sourced fat and heart disease.
You and your damn qualifiers.
I'm sorry. I kind of left that important thing out. When you feed an animal its natural diet, chickens are meant to graze, so they eat bugs and twigs and shit.
Okay.
Cows are meant to eat grass, not soy or grain.
Right.
Right? When you feed an animal, or you allow it to eat its natural diet, the fat it produces is really high in omega-3s. When you force feed an animal...
Is that the fish thing,
yes,
too?
Yes, that's the anti-inflammatory.
Okay.
That's what the Japanese diet's really high in. That's what the Netherlands are really high in, all those naturally sourced. the Sardinian diet. When you force feed an animal... Sardinia? Isn't that the island?
I think it's I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's Sardinia. That's one of the three longest lived...
Catch sardines?
Maybe. It logically sounds like... You know what? We are saying so many unfact-checked things in this podcast. None of which I'm saying right now is not fact-checked. I've researched it extensively. But there's a lot of fact-checklessness here.
All right.
So Sardinia is where sardines come from. There you go. You heard it here first. You're welcome. So... When you force feed an animal, like our industrial farms do, and they're not a natural diet. So you force feed a cow, grain, or soy because it's cheap.
Or ground up other cow.
Or other cow. Which, well, that introduces toxins in the ecosystem, so that's like an extra worse thing. But when you think, oh, grain-fed beef, that sounds good. It's actually not, because the fat that cows produce, milk, butter, and the meat, is really high on omega-6s, which is an inflammatory. That's what causes heart disease, or one of the
things. See, you're breaking my heart, man. I'm sorry. I went to college in Iowa, and grain-fed beef was like the thing there.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you're in Iowa, you're surrounded by pretty much corn and cows. Sorry. And the cows ate the corn, because there's a lot of corn.
Like, just unchecked.
Yeah.
They just went, go nuts.
You didn't mow your lawn. You went out and mowed the corn. It was annoying, you know.
That Kentucky blue corn's looking beautiful this morning.
If you left your car in one place too long, there'd be corn growing out of the hood of it. It was a mess.
That's like a sci-fi.
But it was a tasty mess.
If you turn the car on, would it make popcorn?
It would.
What?
It would.
That's a good problem to have. So long story short, the reason, and it's so sad that it's extra expensive, but... That's why there is, and it's a big push. Being on the fringes of this movement, there's a big push to do organic, naturally sourced. And I thought it was all a bunch of hippie bullshit. But when I got my blood work done, I went full bulletproof. Drove my wife crazy last summer. I was at the farmer's market every weekend. We still are spending a lot of money on the natural
meat. I think the thing that she was most annoyed with was that you kept on going to people, asking them if they had a gun, and if so, would they shoot you to demonstrate that you were, in fact, bulletproof. And that really got old. Like, the first couple of times were fun. But, you know, after like a dozen or so, we're just like, oh, can you just stop with the guns?
So we're not going to talk about the guy who actually did shoot me? That whole thing?
All the guys that have shot you, know. We don't need to talk about
that. You think I would learn after the sixth time. But, so I got my blood work done, and
it was... Oddly enough, not knife-proof.
No, and I would never claim to be knife-proof. The diet is called bulletproof.
Yeah, I still don't get that. How can you be, you know...
It's a tensile strength thing. So
I guess.
At the speed, it's like, okay, so...
Because you're thinking the knife is not going as fast as a bullet.
But that's the problem. So think about a diver off a bridge.
Right.
When they say when you hit water off the London Bridge, it's like hitting cement.
Okay.
Because you're going so fast, you reach terminal velocity. You're hitting the water too
fast. I never believe that. I mean, I understand sort of the principle behind it, but it still sounds like bullshit to me.
Well, okay, but when you jump in the water slower, more knife speed, do you go into it? The water?
No.
Yes, you do.
Yes.
When you jump in water, you go into it, Smike.
Okay. I've been walking on it. I mean, I thought that was the right way to go about it.
Oh, that's the Jesus diet. I don't even... It's a lot of sleeping with prostitutes and...
I eat a lot of Easter eggs.
Really? Mixing the...
Yeah, and fish and wine and bread. And
out of baskets.
That's it, yeah.
Lots of baskets. I was wondering why there's so many baskets in your house. And you always service the same things when we go over. And you never run out of it. Like, you ask if you want anything from Trader Joe's, and you don't buy anything. I feel like you just walk around and think, I don't need anything. Why am I here? I'm going to finish this thought. So, the point is, I got my blood work done, and the doctor was like, holy cow, like, I saw your last results. Keep doing the diet. And then the life insurance that I went for blood work had turned me down the first time, or were going to charge me a ridiculous amount. And then I went again and they were like, oh, okay, you're now the highest class of health.
You got turned down because of your blood?
I turned them down because the price was so bad.
Because of your blood?
It's what's in it, the risks. My cholesterol, my blood pressure, all that stuff.
I don't know. It sounds like you're dealing with some sort of vampire insurance. Like, they didn't like your blood, so they don't want you under their policy.
It's like a fortune-telling. Like, it's like tea leaves.
It's like they're trying to refine you, make your blood better and tastier.
He's perfect now. Your blood is just right.
And now you're signed up with them, so...
No, I'm not. Mm-hmm. I won't admit that I have a life insurance policy. I'm not worth more dead than alive.
So well, obviously, if you're dead, you quit producing all the tasty blood.
Oh, that's a good point. Oh, it's like Daybreakers. So, yeah. So, I believe in the diet.
That was an awful movie.
Really? Awful?
I felt bad for Sam Neill.
Sam? Oh, yeah. He was like the businessman vampire guy, right? I was going to say, don't you feel bad for Willem Dafoe? But, I mean, it's Willem Dafoe. He just kind of fucking does whatever he wants.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe does whatever he wants. And he's always... He's
how awesome was he? How did he cure his vampirism? He got, like, shot into the sun for a second and then underwater, and that cured his vampirism?
Yeah, it was...
Like that... Wow, that's
I think really the whole dumb... premise was, yeah, the sunlight lights them on fire, but then you have to douse them in water to put the fire out, or something silly like that.
So you make them a vampire, then a gremlin, and then they're cured.
Sure.
Okay. I don't understand.
The circle of life.
The circle of mythical creatures. It's a wheel of fortune. So that's my diet. So yes, there are cheeses that are illegal.
How can I get some of these illegal cheeses?
Well, like, this is the thing.
I don't even want to know why they're illegal. I just
want to talk about why they're illegal because it's ridiculous.
All right, because that sound I'm already sold.
It's a bureaucratic thing. They well, made.
That's boring. Oh my god! I thought you know they would like there'd be like some sort of like hash cheese or you know some sort of hallucinogenic.
If you go to a dispensary, I'm sure they have can of cheese. And I don't mean a can of cheese, but I mean cannabis cheese. I have no doubt.
That would be an interesting thing.
I guess. I don't know. That doesn't sound very good.
I don't know.
Very herbaceous. Very herbaceous.
Yeah, you get you know, a little garlic and herb in that.
Well, I guess
yeah.
Cheese can be stinky to begin with. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, so cheese is illegal for other reasons than that.
It's bureaucratic. They made certain cheeses were only produced in other countries for whatever reason. All
right.
And so the cheese makers of America complained. So they said, okay, we'll just make a law that these cheeses are illegal just to stop importing them.
What?
So, you know, when you hear a food is illegal, what do you think?
I think it must be terrible for you.
Right, it, like someone has died.
Because we live in a nanny state. And, you know, this cheese will cause your... ears to explode.
Your
I don't know.
Fingers to turn off.
Your fingers to fall off.
Or your placenta cream to not be good
exactly.
For your skin.
Exactly. No it's gonna one ruin. Wants that. It's gonna make my urine smell terrible.
And then I'll drink it.
And then melt the toilet when I pee into it.
Wow.
See, that would be bad.
That's a very
got
robust
alien pee.
Urethra. It can withstand that.
You have no idea.
Wow. So I was working at a restaurant. Now I feel like I can't name the restaurant because I don't want them to get in trouble. I was working at a restaurant in a large metropolitan city.
Uh-oh. Is this a bad restaurant story?
No, I...
Did they have illegal cheese?
They had a ton of illegal cheeses. And, like, there was one or two people being a large metropolitan
area. Was it
area.
On the menu, or was it, like, you have to, you know, ask, give the waiter a certain kind of handshake or something to get...
There was the, there
could
was the
we,
cheese
could
room.
Could we have the cheese room tonight?
They had a cheese board, which was really cool. They put cheese cloth over it, and you walked by it on the way to the restroom. So you would look at this beautiful-looking cheese board. And if you asked, they would bring the cheese board to you, and they would cut, you know, we would cut cheese for the person based on what they wanted. Yes, we would cut the cheese. Just get it out.
I wasn't going to go there.
But I don't know if we listed all the cheeses in writing. Now that I think about it, we might not have. We had to know them. I don't remember exactly.
Because it was illegal for that cheese to be on
I think so, yeah. Like, I never really thought about it, because once you knew why they were illegal, it was like, this is really dumb. Also, if you're... vegetarian, you can't have most cheese.
If you're vegan.
No, vegetarian.
What?
Because there's rennet in it.
That seems like you're splitting hairs here.
Do you know what rennet is?
Is it some sort of animal fat thing?
Not fat. It's like ground up baby cow liver.
Oh, I did not know that.
Tiny, like a tablespoon of, I think it's called rennet. It's been a while. It's been years since I've been in the restaurant industry.
It sounds delicious.
It's like a stabilizer. So when you could put it in a vat of cheese and this tiny bit of liver, ground liver will, or intestine, one or the other, will stabilize a whole giant thing of cheese. But if you're splitting hairs, you shouldn't eat cheese if you're vegetarian.
Any cheese at all.
I think most cheeses have rennet.
I'm going to go back and
cheeses.
Ask for Velveeta again.
Oh, God.
Would that work for...
If you want heart disease.
What? Velveeta is heart disease cheese now?
Well, it's not natural.
In what sense is it not natural?
Well, I mean, it's not naturally sourced. It's freeze-dried spaceman cheese in a foil fucking packet. that I don't think you need to refrigerate. That says to me it's not super, super good for you.
But it's tasty, Mike. Mike, I grew up eating...
So is lead paint, Mike. Lead paint's apparently fucking delicious.
I grew up eating... Lead paint? Velveeta and no, not lead paint. Velveeta and Spam, frankly. And mayonnaise. Those were three very, very important parts of my childhood diet.
You are not selling your mother's cooking skills right now.
I grew up in the South. I think that explains a lot of this.
Did you eat a lot of collard greens?
I did not. Because we were white. And that just really was, that was more of an ethnic thing.
You know what's funny is that's now a hipster thing, along with kale.
I've had collard greens since then, and I think they're delicious.
Yeah, they're cooked right, a little bit of bacon fat. Wonderful.
Yeah. And you get them when they're, you can get them done like sweet with probably like brown sugar or something cooked into them.
Yeah, they have enough.
That's like, also kind of vinegary and sweet. Mm-hmm. Also delicious. But I'm saying when I grew up, it would have been an ethnic thing, and my mom would never have made that. And now I'm like, I'm kind of missing
why,
out.
Why wouldn't your mom have made it? Because it was ethnic.
Because it was a black thing. We were a white family. I mean, it's really that simple.
I kind of just wanted to put you in the awkward position having to say something like that. Thank you.
I'll go there, man. I grew up in the South. I grew up in Arkansas for the first 10 years of my life.
The cat just jumped onto the floor above us.
That's all right. But yeah, I grew up in Arkansas in like, well, I was born in 1969, so I was in Arkansas for the 70s. Not the most racially diverse, tolerant. Times and locations in our nation's history.
What? They desegregated, and I'm sure it was just like a light switch, right? And then it's all good.
But yeah, there was certainly a big, big divide back then.
So, okay, since we're on this subject,
mm-hmm.
Your parents, we'll be nice and say, no, we'll be nice
My
and
parents
say,
are never going to listen to this, first of all. So
I'm not worried, yeah. Well, yeah. I'm going to say they weren't progressives.
No.
Okay,
no.
But you were, from what I've gathered.
Well, yeah. And this is the thing. I think as we go through the generations,
mm-hmm.
Did I go through this before? I don't remember. I was talking to somebody else about this, and we learn all of our racist stuff,
from our parents.
Racist thoughts. A lot of it from our parents.
Okay,
but it's all learned stuff.
Right.
The hatred, the stereotyping, the negative attitudes towards other races.
Right. We addressed this briefly in a previous podcast, but we never really got into your backstory here.
So, my parents were certainly more racist than I am.
Sure. They're and you could say that's just generational.
And some of it is. And my father grew up in the South as well.
In like the 40s and 50s, right?
Yeah, he was born in the 40s, so yeah, 50s and 60s.
So he was like there during desegregation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you know, certainly, I'm not trying to excuse them
mm-hmm.
at all, but that's the baggage that they bring in.
Yeah.
And I certainly had some older relatives, like great uncles and whatever, who were like just like crazy racist. Although he did make great fig preserves. That was his...
Did he have a racist name for them?
I know.
You know, everything had really awkward racist names, like, at one point?
Yes. Yes. Even I remember the Sambo's restaurants. It was a national chain.
Oh, my God. It was
that
national.
Was a thing. That was a thing. But, yeah. So, my parents were racist. They had racist things in their heads. They didn't say them as much when I was growing up because the 70s, people were trying to get a little bit more...
Less shitty?
Less shitty. And so, you know, the attitudes were there, but they didn't talk about them as much.
So is that why... Like, you strike me as someone who is, especially having grown up at the time you did in the South, or at least when you were younger.
Yeah.
You were a fairly progressive person.
Yes.
So why...
But
so,
I will say... And you know
that I hate in
full disclosure, I grew up in that time where there was a lot of racist stuff going around, and I have, you know, I've when I was a kid, I did my share of taunting other races for no good reason other than because I was white and they were different.
And you were a kid.
And I was a kid.
Yeah, kids are fucking awful to begin with.
They can be awful. as a consequence of growing up like that, that stuff is in my head. It's in my head. It will never not be in my head.
Huh. Okay.
At the same time, I realize that stuff in my head, the racist thoughts and stuff, and I'm not like talking about crazy racist stuff, but there are racist thoughts that go in my head, and I know that they're bullshit.
Well, that's
I know good. That they're wrong and they're awful.
Huh.
It's
your head trash.
But they're locked in there now.
Right. It's your head trash.
And I'm not gonna spread them to anyone. I'm not gonna. Yeah, and I think that's a generational thing. As we go through the multiple generations, the racist stuff gets kind of packed and left further and further behind. That's what I like to think, anyway.
I think it's true. I think it's a very it's sadly way slower than we would like to think it is.
Yes.
Especially somewhere like the South. I think it's really slow.
Because for a while, you know, being racist was like, oh, why aren't you racist? Well, I'm racist.
What's wrong with you, boy?
Yeah, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you talking crap about other races? Maybe we shouldn't talk so much about the racist stuff that we're thinking.
But I'll see you at the Klan meeting. Remember that Klan?
I might talk about some racist stuff at home, but not outside, because I work with a couple of people who are of different ethnicities, and I'm trying to be polite. And it's, you go through those levels over time.
It's a long process.
It is.
And then if you get the one parent who's like, just doesn't try or doesn't
And there are people
then like you're that. You're just setting the back for that strain of the family and that part of the gene pool.
Yeah. But it's my sincere hope that that stuff is going to get buried further back in time with each successive generation. That's my hope.
I think if you're playing the long game, it's a realistic hope. But I wonder if there's always going to be some marginalized group. You know what I mean? Like, ethnicities kind of got replaced a bit. The unwarranted animosity leveraged at ethnicities kind of got replaced by, like, the LGBT community, right? And then it became like a religious thing. I'm in no way marginalizing or minimizing racism in general.
No, every time we find somebody different.
But that's what I'm saying, is I feel like as humankind moves on, we're always going to fucking find someone who's like a smaller pocket of the population than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just going to start all over again. It's like, you're weird leprous fingered people. Fuck you, leprous fingered people. Let's all throw rocks. What was that? It's a hilarious line in The Scarlet Letter. It's like, she has a letter on her dress. Come, let us throw stones at her. I don't know. It's got kind of deep.
Yeah.
The alcohol.
People can be dicks, I think, is what we're trying to say here.
Do you? Okay, here's a question.
Oh, boy. Are we getting real deep now?
Well, yeah, I guess
are
we
you
are.
Plumbing
this is like,
the
this is like Garden of Good and
inherited...
Evil. No. So you've probably seen some dregs of humanity shit, or at least heard people talk of the dregs of humanity. Do you think people are fundamentally good or fundamentally evil?
Oh my!
Not in a religious way. I just mean
grief. That is.
Look, do we need to?
That's one of the ultimate questions.
We're right there. We're both drinking alcohol. This is the time, and you're down a finger.
I don't know. I mean, you see.
Or maybe that's not. Maybe that's bullshit. Maybe no one's fundamentally. You can't generalize like that.
I don't think you can.
Okay.
I think you know, people are to a large extent products of their environment, and maybe that's not a popular position to take. But I think it's true.
So you're taking nurture over nature.
I am.
Huh. Okay.
I think people have the capacity to do, you know, to be kind and do wonderful things, but you know, when you look at people who are growing up in terrible conditions, and then those people do terrible things,
mm-hmm.
you kind of make that connection.
Logical, yeah.
And I mean, we're pretty good people, but we live pretty comfortably.
Right.
It's easy for us to be good.
No, we're totally on a high horse. I just ride this high horse. My ass is in incredible shape because of all the horse riding I do. And getting onto the high horse, like, I need, like, a step ladder. It's a very nice ladder.
It's lovely.
It's a gold-crusted ladder.
Handmade.
Blood diamond studded.
Oh.
Well, every diamond's a fucking blood diamond. Okay, so this is weird. So when I bought my engagement ring, I looked at the diamond and I knew. Like, I looked at, like, four or five diamonds. I was like, I know this is the diamond I'm going to buy. And I had to have that split second where I was like, I am not a wealthy person. Somebody died because of this diamond. I have to live with that.
Oh my god!
I know that I'm buying a blood diamond because it's all I can afford. And it's custom, and I love my fiance, now wife, and I want to buy her the ring and the type that she wanted. It's a beautiful diamond. But it's a fucking blood diamond. Ugh. It's just weird. You know what I mean? And weird in a, like, I'm totally marginalizing or minimalizing or whatever the horrific backstory that this stone probably has.
Yeah. You know? And I think the whole thing with, boy, maybe we shouldn't go down this particular rabbit hole, but if you look at the whole history of the diamond industry, it's like this whole, it's this whole manufactured demand that they created for diamonds.
They took the Hallmark model and they applied it to something way more lucrative.
Yeah, because it wasn't really a thing until the industry made it a thing.
Right, I got to buy an engagement ring.
You have to buy an engagement ring.
Why? Because you have to.
And it has to be a diamond. Why?
Why?
Because they're...
they're what you put in engagement rings.
Yeah.
It's incredibly circular logic. Every time I hear someone spout off of paranoid stuff, I think, you know, the Illuminati isn't real, but just a bunch of really rich people are like, let's just fucking make this a rule. And then we'll just make money off it. And
yes.
Who cares who dies because of it?
Which totally happens.
It is. It does. It totally does.
That's depressing.
I think that people are fundamentally, generally, how about that? I think fundamental is kind of rough because I think you're right. Nurture does have a lot to do with it. I think people as a whole, probably due to our natural selfishness, are probably pretty like, I'll just leave me alone and I'll leave you alone. That's about it, the nicest thing I'll say about fundamental humanism. But I think that with enough nurture or that occasional sociopath, you know, because you have to account for that.
Well, okay.
It's rare.
That's a whole, yeah.
And I'm not going to get into it. But I think that human beings can be capable of some of the most vile, like, acts against one another that just flies in the face of what should even be humanly possible.
Right.
For one person to live with. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I lean on the side of people suck. Because really, I don't think people are like, if you just raise someone in a vacuum, I don't think they're going to be like, hello, I'm the next coming of Christ because I'm just that great. I think they're like, I'm not going to fuck with you. Just don't fuck with me. All the way down to, I'm going to cut off your fingers and toes and eat them. And then feed your ground up guts to your parents. I don't fucking know.
And again, it's easy for us. First of all, we're not hungry.
I've been drinking a lot of really nice liquor, so I'm starting to get the munchies, but...
Well, okay. You know what I mean.
I know
and I think
mean.
We've probably rarely, if ever, been hungry. And that alone, just being fed, keeps people pretty happy.
That's true. That's a good point.
And, you know, a fed person is generally a nice social person. But once the food starts running out, then it's like, I'm just going to shiv everybody who's not me. Or my immediate family.
Whom I don't really want to eat.
Yeah. I'd prefer not to eat my family, so I'm just going to
kill you first.
Everybody
shank,
else.
Shank, then. Shank,
yeah. And I think, you know, that's all part of being human.
Shiving one another?
If necessary.
To get food.
If necessary. Because ultimately we want to survive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the driving principle behind everything else.
There is, it's amazing to me. I did one of my favorite, I'm going to try to lighten the mood a bit. I did one of my favorite things today, which was my soft skills training for the new hires at work.
Mm-hmm.
It's my favorite things to do in the world, especially work related. And you know, when I was putting this together over the last couple of years, I did like enough research and pulled enough stuff that I knew about just lizard brain, you know, cause like, Being on a support call, again, we're talking about first world problems, right? Like, the panic and stress of doing your first support call, really intense.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit different than your parents being held at gunpoint and being forced to, you know,
in a sense it is. In a sense, though, I think we scale that up.
But that's my point.
Okay.
Is it still activating?
I'm sorry for stealing your thunder,
Mike. No, I would agree with you. You know what, Mike? That's an excellent point. But the point is that it all activates. And again, I am so not trying to belittle the horrors that happen in other countries or even in our country in small pockets of the population. But it does, I think, activate the same lizard brain, like the same, you know, the same animal brain part of us. It all goes back to the same shit that is still, the caveman is still in there somewhere in all of us. We haven't evolved that much.
Right.
Which is crazy.
Apparently you're feeding him really well.
So well. My paleo side is like, So it is funny when I'm like, you know, just know, guys, that you think you're really good right now. You've had 6 weeks of training, but you're going to get that call and you're going to fucking panic. You know, try to remember these basic things, you know, soft skills related, and then you can get by. And then we do a lot of improv games.
Nice.
Yeah. I think it's a great workshop. If I ever split off and did my own thing for DISC, my own DISC job or DISC contracting, I would totally take that workshop with me. I mean, it's mine. It's not like you can't take my...
You can't copyright improv. Games.
No, you can't.
You can't. I think that's
they're
a thing.
Proving that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, comedy sports would have just, you know, patented everything.
Well, it certainly seems like they did patent some stuff.
They do.
Local theaters ran into a problem.
Some things. That's a whole other ball of worms.
Ball of worms?
Yeah, I'm mixing my metaphors.
I know, but that's a really good visual. That's like, does it bounce? Probably not. It's like a wet thwack, right?
It's going to just splat apart.
The worms get
the worms
loose.
Will go their own way once they hit the ground. slowly
inching,
but they
away.
Will
I mean, what I did was I built it from improv. I said, okay, you know, I'm coming from New York, I have these improv games, what translates well to going from improv to solid skills, because I think they're very related. And so the three games I use are this isn't meant to be an improv workshop, but you know, I talk for a bit and then we do a sound and motion warm up. And doing that in a corporate setting is really, it's really fun to watch, because it's just not, it flies in the face of everything you think of when you think of corporate America. You know what I mean? So it's weird noises, weird movements, looking like an idiot. And I tell people, you're going to feel stupid, and that's the point. So I want you to break down your barriers. And then we talk for a bit, and then...
Also, you want to get dirt on them, so...
Well, I tell them it's a safe room up front. I'm like, I literally said to them today, I was like, try to keep the racist stuff to a minimum, because at a certain point, you have to try to say that to make it, let it come out. But this is a safe room, and if we're improvising to some degree and something slips out, it's okay. It never does, but I do offer that. and then later on, I use a lot of status a lot, which is, it's intrinsic to improv, but it's intrinsic to life. And I make that case very strongly. And I tell them, like, you know, so to do that,
as a big status guy, I'm all with you there.
I know you're on the same page. So to introduce it, I do the card game.
Right.
So I look around the room. I try to judge personality type, and I count the number of people, and I pick the cards from two to ace, you know, giving spread. And then if there's enough people, I'll do dupes to really fuck with them. And so, you know, they don't know their card. The whole point, I tell them, you can't look at your card.
So they have headbands.
Rubber bands. Yep.
Rubber bands. They put the card.
Facing
they don't look
out.
At the card. They put
don't.
The card facing
I have them pull the rubber
on...
band out, and I stick the card in, and they let go of the rubber band, and they can't see it. And I tell them, don't be the one guy who did eventually get fired, and I like to joke that it's because of this, who went up to someone and was like, hey, you're the king, baby. Hey, deuce. And I was like, you're fucking ruining my game, dude. What are you doing? but yeah, I tell them, okay, your one job is to figure out what your card is. And the only way to do that, since you can't tell each other what your card is you have to interact at a work function and figure out where in the spectrum you are of the playing cards based on how you're being treated. And treat everyone else accordingly. So Nero, the trainer, and I, the new hire trainer, we always like to throw a wrench in. So, like, especially if they're having trouble, we're like, there's a big promotion and the ace is the CEO. And then you see them, that one person get mobbed with admirers. It's really funny. I've seen people act as footstools for the ace. And, like, the two generally knows they're the two pretty quickly. And the ace, but, like, the nine always is like, I don't have no fucking clue what card I am. Because no one knows how to interact with them.
And that's just, that's life.
That's life. You're just that dude.
When you're the nine, you're like, I don't know what's going on.
You're paying your mortgage okay, but you're not upper management. So then I actually don't talk about status until after that game. I say, okay, let's talk about Ace. How did you figure it out quickly? And then I let that kind of naturally, and they usually get there themselves, segue into status. And then I talk about the wall thing, the evolution of the wall. So okay. Do you ever notice how, think of the famous speeches. I don't mean good guys. I just mean general. Like, you think Hitler, you think Mussolini, you think JFK. Like,
I was going Lincoln, but okay.
There's no video of Lincoln. So think the videos of, okay. of those. Or pictures. Are they ever in an open field, or do they have something large behind them?
Something big behind them.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
Banner, flag, usually a palace. If they're right. in Europe. So, you know, I learned about this because I thought it was really interesting. We, again, caveman brain, right? Lizard brain. We are still programmed to adhere or get as close to the wall as we can. Any wall. Because you can't get flanked from a wall.
Right.
So there is a part of us that still seeks the wall to some side of us because we no longer have to worry on some very fundamental level that we're going to get flanked by an animal or a tribe attack.
Okay.
So what's interesting is if you have an old person and a rich person walking...
Mm-hmm.
We in America walk on the right. The right gets the wall.
Okay.
Right? On the sidewalk.
Yeah. The wall's the good side.
The wall's the side that people of status want. So the people of status get the wall closest to them.
Right.
And old people get status because of their age. These are just fundamental things about society. So, and I've seen this in New York so many times. When you get a dude on Power Lunch who makes six figures at, 28 years old, and then you get the old person who, I'm old and live in New York City, they both walk towards the wall, and they will just two oncoming trains, and then they have to either do the dance or someone just doesn't fucking move, and the other person has to veer at the last second. It's fascinating when you know to look for it. It's everywhere. So what I tell them is, so I've given you the playing card,
and what wins that competition for the wall?
If there's alcohol involved?
Eye contact.
Oh, so if they don't make eye contact?
If they do make eye contact,
then who wins?
The person who doesn't look away.
Oh, so it becomes a staring match?
I think it does.
I could see that. I'm usually not that
close. Getting way into my own status theory, though, but that's a whole other thing.
Okay. Which is that...
eye contact is a huge part of status.
Okay.
And if you look at somebody, they will usually look away, because people don't want to maintain eye contact.
That's true.
And when they do...
It's a battle of wills?
You win.
Huh.
Yes, you win.
What if
that
I just
contest.
Love looking into your eyes, though?
Hmm?
What if I just love looking into your eyes?
Then we both win.
Yeah, we do. And so do our wives. So I talk about that, and then that lets me segue into... So I get back to so you're in that moment where your first call is a very difficult thing, and you don't know what to do.
Right, and you can't make eye contact. It doesn't work at all.
And we do talk about that. I'm like, you don't have anything visual, so your voice, your cadence, your volume, your pitch, your intonation, those things become really important.
It seems like a joke, but that's true.
No, it's huge.
Because looking at somebody else's face is such a big part of that status exchange, that reading another person.
The subconscious cueing. I actually talk about emotional intelligence, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who seemingly have psychic abilities often are just very high EI. They are very good on a subconscious level of reading cues. So we talk about that, and I say, look, when that you get that call early on, your second week on the floor, and it's that dreaded call where it's like, I have bad call quality. It's the worst thing you can hear on a complaint, because that's the most complex thing to fix.
Bad call quality.
Yeah, VoIP phones, so internet phones. It could be the internet, it could be your LAN, it could be the phone, it could be the cabling, it could be the carrier.
Oh, okay, so you're saying when you get the call...
And they say, I'm having echo on my calls. You're like, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
When you've been around a while, you're like, okay, there's only so many things it can be, I'll just start... paring it down. When you're new, you just go, fuck, like universally. And I tell them, when your brain's doing the fuck and you have no idea what to do and you freeze, just play a status game. Because it helps you orient your mind. There's only three types of status for us in mm-hmm. customer support. High, low, high, and matching.
Mm-hmm.
New Yorkers come on brusque. It's a little hard to tell if they want you to match them, which sometimes they do, or they want you to play low to them. Someone calls you nearly in tears, they probably want you to play high.
And this, I know for people listening, this might sound like complete bullshit.
And I say that to
them. But it's totally true.
It's completely true. But I haven't gotten to the point how I prove it. I do prove it to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell them, and we discuss it enough. I get a lot of back and forth with them, so they kind of get. I say to them, if I'm going to lose anyone in the room, it's going to be right at this point. So tell me, this is bullshit to you. Tell me, I want to know that. And a couple people are like, I really don't get it, and we've gotten through it. But to really encapsulate it, we do a neutral script exercise, which you helped me develop.
Right.
And that nails it. So I give them a script that I wrote, and I tell them, you're going to fail at this. I give you a wordy script that doesn't fit the character I'm going to do as a client. You're going to fail. All you can do, because you have to stick to the script, is you can use your voice only, cadence, pitch, intonation, speed, mm-hmm. Volume, to try to suit, to try to match status with what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
However, or not match, but find the right status.
Right.
So I do, and I have a whole bunch of characters, and Nero and I will like talk for a while and try to figure out like what kind of person are we dealing with, the student, and then we try to either throw them or give them something that's so familiar to them it's going to throw them because it's too easy.
Right.
So I have like the incomprehensible Southerner, we call it. And without a script, it's hilarious because I'm incomprehensible.
You just got such a strong draw.
My phone number?
Understand what you're saying.
I based it on a phone call I got at a video store once. I was working at a video store.
It was somebody from Louisiana.
It was Louisiana. But it won't work. Like, I'm on Walmart. With the script, they get that pass, but they still are trying not to laugh. I have this one guy, my favorite client ever, was this like bordered on stoner dude, but he was high up in his company. He was a partner, so he did tech support for a bunch of other companies.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew. He knew everything we were up against. He knew what was wrong. So when he called in, the entire company's phones could be down, but he's like, hey, we got a down location. Here's the IP address, this is that, and the other thing. He's the easiest guy to talk to, no matter how bad the situation was. He's like, I get it. You need this information, and I know there's a SLA, service level agreement, and there's only so much you can do. So I do that guy, and then I do like the increasingly angry person.
Nice.
And I start with the super neutral person, and that's the creepiest of all.
Because they're like a sociopath.
They are. That's how we describe them. We said it today. I was like, would you want to talk to this person? I was like, no, because you can't read them at all. So through this, and I always ask them, give this person.
So what do you do when you get the when you actually get the sociopath caller? Do you sociopath right back at them?
Because no.
I don't know what else you would do.
Well, I mean, yes, but you don't kill someone. You do the neutral professional.
I would totally try to match that neutral though.
The guy today did it and it worked. it was like a really creepy conversation. when I say he just didn't have an opinion on anything, he was just very professional as he read through the script.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. And we said, well, I wouldn't want this call, so try not to tick him off. Because that's the thing, is you don't know what's going to set that person off.
Right.
But it's cool because you're in a corporate setting and you're really making people think in a way that they wouldn't normally anyway, much less in a corporate setting. And everyone remembers their sound and motion warm-up. I could say to someone 2 years later, hey, do you remember what you did? And they're like, oh, yeah, I had the giraffe, whatever. So it's nice. I get to touch everyone's experience when they're new with that and help them.
And also just touch everyone when they're new.
I think I am a believer in positive touches. I don't know why not everyone does. HR is a problem with it, but whatever. Safe rooms, Mike. Safe room. Wow. Well, we went deep tonight.
We did. Perhaps too deep?
Too deep. Well, we'll let the comment section of our website that doesn't exist let us know. We'll get the full report from at least my wife and maybe Colin. Shoutouts.
Yeah. Hey, Colin.
Hi, Colin. Hi, Erica.
We should have him as a guest some night.
We should. Yeah, well, he had a podcast that was actually pretty entertaining. Did you ever hear it?
He is. No, I don't think I have, but he is quite an entertaining fellow.
I never said he wasn't. But yes, I agree. He is very entertaining. But they were doing a Death by Horror. So they got a group of them, him and Stu, and two other friends, and they would watch a horror movie separately and then discuss it on a cinematic level.
Oh, nice.
It was a cool idea, but they also, I think, were doing it remotely, which, it just makes it a little bit harder. So, all right, I'll probably cut it off because we're already over an hour, but in case I don't cut this off, so I upgraded my mic, for those at home, to a Yeti from a Snowball, both by the Blue, which is a fantastic microphone.
Yes. And the first night for that was the previous podcast.
Two ago, it was Cruising.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, it was two podcasts ago. So
Cruising wasn't that bad. But the one after
because we weren't drinking lime.
Yes. The one after that, you gave me that heavily lime tequila drink.
I ruined some really good Patron with too much lime.
I felt bad about not even finishing all the way. No, I finished most of it.
You did your duty.
But it was so such a strong wine flavor. I was puckered and I was smacking my lips all.
And I spent 2.5 hours editing out like each lip smack and that I kept doing as well. But it's an amazing microphone. You just have to be a little bit more professional about it.
But my, I don't even know what to call this.
Yeah, let's name
it. Honey Apple? I don't know.
No, it's got to be cooler than that.
No. Honey, I appled the kids.
Yeah. I like it, but there's trademark issues.
Honey, there. I shrunk the apples?
No. That just sounds like shriveled gonads. Be a little bit more interpretive.
Sweet Uncle Apple? I don't know.
That sounds like a pedophile.
That's what I was going for then.
Oh, well.
You try one. I've gotten a few here.
Bee's knees.
Bee's knees? There's no apple in that.
Interpreting.
Honey Jack?
Honey Jack. Where's the Jack?
Apple Jacks. Okay, that was a reach.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It didn't get it right away. That's the problem. You gotta nail it.
I liked Honey Jack. Give me your next one then.
I can't come up with anything catchier than Honey Jack. So guess what? Congratulations! It's a Honey Jack.
And with that, we are Buddies in Space.
Buddies in Space. You are S. Michael Smith.
And you are Michael Carassi.
And we'll be back soon with more podcasts.
And more Honey Jack.
And more Honey Jack.